I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Californians brought in the new year with the legalization of recreational marijuana, and now stores are open for business. It was the first state that legalized medical marijuana more than 20 years ago. Last Thursday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions rescinded the Obama administration's hands-off marijuana policy, known as the Cole Memo, that let states come up with their own laws. Today, pot is legal for recreational and medical use in a majority of states. And now prosecutors have the authority to crack down on dispensaries and even arrest pot smokers, but will they use that authority? The pushback against the Sessions decision has been swift and critical and bipartisan. Let me play something that Jeff Sessions said about the dangers of marijuana when he was a senator.
Colorado was one of the leading states that started the movement to suggest that marijuana is not dangerous. And we're going to find it, in my opinion, ripple throughout the entire American citizenry. And we're going to see more marijuana use, and it's not going to be good. We're going to see more other drug use, illegal drug use also, which is damaging. I mean, we need grown-ups in charge in Washington to say marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized. It ought not to be minimized. That it's, in fact, a very real danger. You can see the accidents, traffic deaths related to marijuana jumped 20%. These are the kind of things that we're going to see throughout the country, and you'll see cocaine and heroin increase more than it would have, I think, had we not talked about it. The creating of knowledge that this drug is dangerous, you cannot play with it, it's not funny, it's not something to laugh about, and trying to send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
We asked John Hudak to join us, senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution, wrote a book called Marijuana, A Short History. John Hudak, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
So that's Senator Jeff Sessions. He's now, of course, the attorney general. He may be an outlier on marijuana, but as attorney general, what kind of power does he have?
Well, he's certainly an outlier, particularly in the sense that it appears that Mr. Sessions hasn't read anything that science has put out on the topic of marijuana in about 30 years. But as Attorney General, he has tremendous power to choose how to enforce the laws, to pressure or advise U.S. attorneys on where and when to go after certain types of criminal behaviors. And under federal law, the production, sale, distribution, and use of marijuana is a crime, no questions asked. And so as states have chosen to experiment in the legalization of marijuana, they have done so in violation of federal law, but with the Justice Department willing to essentially look the other way so long as they were abiding by guidance from the Justice Department. He's now reversed that, and it puts at risk this industry that has grown over the past 20 years.
And this is why marijuana is so complicated. I mentioned the Cole Memo, and this was something that the Obama Justice Department set forth. They had a number of guidelines, and I'll just read a couple of them. Prevent distribution of marijuana to minors, prevent marijuana revenue from funding criminal enterprises, gangs, or cartels. Did the Cole Memo open the door for all the legalization that we have seen in the last couple of years?
Well, really, voters in states have opened the door for legalization. What the Cole Memo did was it gave cover to businesses and frankly to states to proceed with carrying out what voters asked state governments to do. And so, as you said, the Cole Memo put in place a system that said if a state has chosen to reform its marijuana laws, the state must enact a robust regulatory system to monitor legal marijuana. And in the process, that regulatory system has to abide by 8 key areas, and you mentioned a few of them. And so long as that was the case, U.S. attorneys would not go after these businesses.
There are, what, 29 states? It's funny, I was Googling this and I kept coming up with a different number of states. How many states have legalized marijuana, either for recreation or for medical use?
So for medical use, it's 29 states in D.C., and for recreational use, it is 8 states in D.C., although Vermont and New Hampshire are expected to vote today on legalization initiatives in their state legislatures.
So clearly, if what states are doing is reflecting voter opinion, public opinion on marijuana is we need to legalize it.
That's absolutely right. So polling since the early 1990s has seen a steady and sharp increase in public support for legalization and for the government to stay out of this area. So, for example, in December, Gallup polled on this question. They've been polling on this question since the 1960s and found that 64% of Americans want legalization to happen. And in fact, that poll was the first time that a majority of Democrats, independents, and Republicans all supported legalization. And the Quinnipiac, poll in December also showed that 71% of Americans don't want the federal government to intervene in states that have made this choice.
Wow. Marijuana is designated a Schedule I drug. So is heroin. Why? How?
Well, There's a long history behind this. So what Schedule I status in the United States means is that the substance has no accepted medical use in the United States. It can't be used safely in any medical procedure in the United States. And it is has a high risk of abuse. That is something that you could likely say is true about heroin, but for marijuana, many states have said the opposite. They've said there is medical value, it can be used safely, and it's not as prone to abuse as other substances. In reality, marijuana is a Schedule I substance in part because of a very racialized history in the United States and in other countries about who uses marijuana, why they use marijuana, and what happens to the human body when they use marijuana. Many of those claims were exaggerated or just outright lies. And then as the United States leadership in the United Nations during the 1960s tackled drug policy, an international agreement was forged that put marijuana at the top of the list of quote-unquote bad substances, dangerous substances. And as nations across the world passed laws to come into compliance with that agreement called the Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs, that created in the United States a law called the Controlled Substances Act.
Well, but here we are, 2018, we've got a majority of states moving in the legalization direction. Do you see, and we'll be talking about this a little bit later on in the show with our other guests as well, but do you see that marijuana will be taken off the Schedule I drug list?
The federal government has had multiple opportunities to remove marijuana from being a Schedule I drug. The most recent opportunity came in August of 2016 when the Obama administration opted to maintain Schedule I status. There is a lot of pressure within Congress to change this. There is a lot of pressure within the marijuana advocacy community to change this. So far, even a liberal administration like the Obama administration was unwilling to do so. But ultimately, this is we are on a path toward greater marijuana reform in the United States, and the scheduling of marijuana is probably on that target list.
What's also so interesting is that we often see more conservative states supporting things like states' rights. And now we have this decision by a conservative attorney general that really, again, puts the federal government on a collision course with states.
Well, Marty, that's exactly right. This is a, in some ways, shocking decision by Jeff Sessions, who claims himself to be someone who favors states' rights, who supports a small role for the federal government, and for someone who claims to be in favor of free business practice. What repealing the Cole memo does is attacks all three of those tenets. And so Jeff Sessions, in this case, has let his outdated and ignorant views on drug policy overwhelm many of the other parts of his own ideology.
He talked about the dangers. I mean, we know how pot has been described as a gateway drug. Now that we have so many places where it is legal, either for medicinal reasons or for recreational reasons, what can we say about the dangers of pot, if anything?
Well, certainly the use of marijuana comes with risks. If you are operating a motor vehicle or heavy machinery, that creates risks. The consumption of heavy amounts of marijuana certainly comes with health risks, which have been documented. But the idea of marijuana as a gateway drug has been refuted in medical science. There's nothing chemically about marijuana that makes you more likely to use heroin or cocaine, despite Senator Sessions' outright lies about that on the Senate floor. Certainly there are risks. And what a lot of states and a lot of activists and others have said is, yes, marijuana has risks, and prohibition of marijuana has done nothing to mitigate those risks. So let's put in place a system that legalizes marijuana but also regulates marijuana and allows states to make certain choices about how to minimize risks, take that industry and that business out of the hands of operations like drug cartels, and bring it into the limelight so customers know what they're getting and regulations can be put in place to try to deal with some of the challenges that exist.
And do we know whether legalized marijuana has put some of these cartels out of business?
It's hard to measure or pull on how well a cartel is doing, as you would expect. But certainly given the billions of dollars that have been spent on legal marijuana since its inception in Colorado and Washington in 2012 and the states that have followed, you have to assume that part of the marijuana business that was previously in the black market has been taken away and shifted to the legal market. Has the black market been eliminated entirely? Of course not. Mm. But surely portions of it have been.
What's interesting, and again, we're just talking about the complexities and even the confusion involved with marijuana and the laws about marijuana. So you have the District of Columbia where marijuana is legal. Do you see people out on the street dispensing or smoking marijuana in D.C.?
So D.C. has a very odd system in place. We here in D.C., I'm a D.C. resident, have a fully functioning, what you would consider normal medical marijuana program. And in 2014, a large majority of D.C. voters passed a legalization initiative. But before it could take effect, Congress attached a rider to a spending bill that said that the D.C. government could not spend any money to implement that initiative. So what we have in D.C. now is a legal home grow. You can grow marijuana at home. But the Congress, the U.S. Congress, banned D.C. from setting up a regulatory system and a market. So surely people grow at home and sell it illegally, but the system is in place for getting it in ways if you want to get it. Do I see a lot of people walking down the streets smoking marijuana? I mean, it's not a regular occurrence, but surely it's something you encounter. But I see the same in New York or Boston or Philly or a lot of other states without legal marijuana.
Well, John Hudak, I appreciate you joining us today in Radio Times, getting this very interesting and complicated conversation started. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And he's senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution, wrote a book called Marijuana, A Short History. We're going to take a very short break. We have two more guests who will be joining us as we continue our conversation talking about Jeff Sessions and the many states that have legalized marijuana. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. The laws that make marijuana illegal are on a collision course with the states that have legalized the drug for recreational and medical use. On the one hand, pot is a Schedule I drug like heroin and illegal under federal law. On the other hand, it's becoming a multi-billion dollar business. The Obama administration had a hands-off approach, allowing states to determine their own pot policies. Attorney General Sessions upended that last week, allowing prosecutors to potentially go after growers and dispensaries and maybe even pot users. Joining us now is James Higdon, and he covers drug policy for Politico magazine. He also covers Kentucky as a freelancer for The Washington Post and wrote a book called The Cornbread Mafia, a homegrown syndicate's code of silence and the biggest marijuana bust in American history. James Higdon, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Robert Mikos, and he's a professor, Robert Mikos, professor of law at Vanderbilt Law School. And nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me play current Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Here he is answering questions about marijuana legalization during his confirmation hearing last year.
One obvious concern is that the United States Congress has made the possession of marijuana in every state and distribution of it an illegal act. So if that's something is not desired any longer, Congress should pass a law to change the rule. It's not so much the Attorney General's job to decide what laws to enforce. We should do our job and enforce laws effectively as we're able.
Do you think, James Higdon, that Congress is ready to change the law about or the laws about marijuana?
Well, of course, the Attorney General in that statement is correct. It is up to the Congress to change the law to reflect the will of the people. And now we're talking about 29 states with medical, 8 with full legal. If you're talking about states who have legalized CBD or some other form of marijuana that the DEA, that the Justice Department still considers Schedule 1, we're talking like 48 or 49 states. So it's certainly up to Congress to do that. Of course, Congress is dysfunctional. Congress does nothing that it's not required to do. And so does this latest action by Jeff Sessions last week to repeal the Cole memo, does that light a fire under Congress to actually do something about it? And that sort of remains to be seen. That's what everyone's kind of watching and seeing what happens.
Well, I want to get back to you, but let me turn to you, Robert Mikos. Do we have a problem in that we have a law that makes marijuana illegal, at least a federal law, essentially in a collision course with a majority of states?
It creates a lot of problems for the industry, for users, basically for anyone who's interested in this field. And those problems really do stem from the ban that's on the books, not just from how that ban is enforced by the Attorney General. Just to give one example,
sure.
The fact that marijuana is illegal under federal law makes it possible for someone to bring a RICO lawsuit against someone who is producing or selling marijuana, even pursuant to state law. That serves as the predicate. That criminal activity serves as the predicate for a civil RICO action. A civil RICO action under federal law can be brought by a private citizen. It doesn't have to be brought by the DOJ. That's just one example where the continuation of this ban on the books, even if it's not being enforced, it continues to disrupt sort of the operation of these marijuana businesses that have been authorized by the state.
But does it also create a kind of disrespect for the law? If there's a law that people willingly and openly flaunt, does it create a problem for our legal system?
It does. You know, I think the Attorney General does have a concern for the rule of law. And part of the problem here, though, stems from just the fact that Congress might have overreached, that it might have banned some activity that it can't necessarily control using federal resources alone. And that's where this disconnect has arisen. It's really this battle between the states over what they think ought to be legal and what they think ought to be banned. But it does create a certain disrespect for the federal government and for federal law. But until recently, Congress really just hasn't had the incentive to correct that by removing the federal ban.
James, I do want to go back to you, but let me just ask you one more question, Robert. I mean, can we, with this change coming from the Attorney General, can we anticipate arrests, prosecutors going in and arresting people in states where marijuana is legal?
I'm skeptical, especially in medical marijuana states like Pennsylvania and New Jersey. There's a separate provision where Congress has gotten involved, where Congress has forbidden the DOJ from spending any money to crack down on the medical marijuana industry. So the medical marijuana industry is safe at this point. Really, the ones who might be vulnerable under the change of policy announced last week are the ones who are supplying marijuana for adult use. But even they, I think, do not have much to fear, in part because federal law enforcement resources remain quite limited throughout the land. So if you're a United States attorney, maybe the attorney general has just given you the green light to start a crackdown, but you'd have to divert resources from other enforcement priorities, like the opioid crisis or immigration, if you wanted to tackle this one. So I don't expect a crackdown to follow.
James, let me go back to you. There is this, and whoever heard of this until a couple of weeks ago, or a couple of days ago, the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment. How does that figure into our conversation?
Well, it's just what your other guest was talking about. It's this provision that was passed as an amendment to an appropriations bill that denies the Justice Department resources for enforcing federal law against state legal medical marijuana businesses. So adult use recreational states are still vulnerable, even with the Rohrabacher-Farr, which is continuing in the current budget negotiations under continuous resolutions. But whether or not it survives the ongoing budget negotiations is an open question. But because of Jeff Sessions' actions last week, it makes it more likely that it will pass. There's even some push. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi has stated that she wants protections for adult use states as well included in the omnibus spending bill. So we could see this become a major part of the budget negotiations as the current CR ticks down. I think January 19th is its deadline. And I agree that it's unlikely that the federal government will divert its resources. The problem with repealing the Cole memo in medical marijuana states is it allows local police organizations or sheriff departments, allows them to potentially raid some of these businesses on behalf of the federal government and then do asset forfeiture and seize property and cash from these businesses. And that's one of the things that Congress members in the Congressional Cannabis Caucus are voicing concern about, just the possibility of the federal government allowing local law enforcement agencies to do property seizure, asset forfeiture.
Well, that's very interesting. And let me bring in a clip from Colorado Republican Senator Cory Gardner. This was last Friday, responding to Attorney General Jeff Sessions and his decision related to marijuana laws.
Prior to his confirmation, then Senator Sessions said that he didn't have any plans to, told me there were no plans to reverse the Cole memorandum. Then Senator Sessions told me that marijuana simply wasn't going to be on President Trump's agenda, that it was something that they weren't going to deal with, that something that President Trump simply wasn't going to focus on. That was back in the spring of 2016, and up until 8:58 this morning, that was the policy. One tweet later, one policy later, a complete reversal of what many of us on the Hill were told before the confirmation, what we had continued to believe the last year, and without any notification, conversation, or dialogue with Congress. Completely reversed.
We are talking about Attorney General Jeff Sessions' ruling on marijuana laws. Talking with James Higdon, he covers drug policy for Political Magazine. Also wrote a book called The Cornbread Mafia. Also with us is Robert Mikos, and he's a professor of law at Vanderbilt Law School. And joining us, of course, by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times. James, he was pretty mad, and it's interesting how many Republicans are opposed to what the Attorney General did.
Sure. It's really, Senator Gardner is, I believe, 43 years old. It's really illustrating the generational divide on this issue. It doesn't cut across left and right so much as it cuts between young and old. And younger legislators, even when Republicans are replacing Republicans in some of these House districts, they're more likely to be sympathetic or even pro-marijuana than their older Republican counterparts. And there's even some older Democrats who are either, not on board on this issue, dragging their feet, or just plumb against it. So, Dianne Feinstein from California, for instance, one would think would be an advocate on this issue, but Senator Feinstein is in her 80s, and she is not on board.
Well, that's interesting. More of a divide age-wise than political-wise.
I believe that's right.
What do you think about, and I'll turn to you about this whole question of asset forfeiture. Let's assume that in some states, some prosecutors begin to go after either people that are growing or selling marijuana. And I'm just curious from your perspective, Robert Mikos, about what could happen and would there be things like asset forfeiture from what you know?
That would be an appealing route for a U.S. attorney to take for a couple of reasons. And really the big one is that's a quicker, more streamlined procedure than initiating a criminal prosecution. And oftentimes under federal law, that civil asset forfeiture, you can seize assets that are involved in the commission of a federal crime without getting a criminal conviction. It doesn't necessarily involve a jury. If you were to bring a criminal case, more resources would need to be involved, and you might worry about things like jury nullification in places like Colorado or Oregon. So asset forfeiture is clearly an appealing route to take, but it's no guarantee of success, and it still uses resources. You've got to assign a bunch of DEA agents to go out there and take the assets, to manage them and keep track of them to make sure they don't disappear. You've got to figure out who owns what. And even then, this has happened with other medical marijuana dispensaries in the past. Prior to the Obama administration enforcement guidance, there was a prominent civil asset forfeiture case against a very large dispensary in Northern California, Harborside. It took 4.5 years and ultimately ended in a dismissal with the federal government really getting nothing. So it's no guarantee of success, and it doesn't necessarily pan out, but it would be a more appealing option than criminal prosecution.
Let me get some callers, and we've got Marianne from Tabernacle, New Jersey, joining us on Radio Times. Marianne, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
In all of the discussions of legalization, whether for medical or recreational purposes, I've never really heard talk about how employers handle either drug testing for new hires or for existing employees. I'd be interested to hear what your guests have to say about that, and I'll listen to their responses offline.
Fair enough.
Thank you, Marty.
Sure, Marianne. Thanks for the call. Robert, can I toss that back to you?
Sure. It's a great question. This is one of the big issues confronting people about marijuana law, including people who have nothing to do with actually producing and selling the drug. Can an employer fire someone who fails a drug test? They take a drug test as part of their normal work requirements, and it turns out that they have marijuana metabolites in their system, inactive ones even. And most states have punted on this issue. They've failed to address it, and the courts have interpreted their statutes as not protecting off-the-job use of marijuana. But we're starting to see a few states directly protect people, especially medical marijuana users, from employment discrimination, as long as they're using marijuana off the job and it's not affecting their work performance. And we just had a federal case. So there was a state case in Massachusetts that held that Massachusetts law protected valid medical marijuana users for off-the-job use. Mm. And we just had a Connecticut federal case that found that those state protections for employees were not preempted by federal law.
I appreciate that answer. Let me go back to you, James Higdon, and even going back to your book, The Cornbread Mafia, and I asked John Hudak at the very beginning of the show, who also wrote a book about marijuana, has the growing acceptance and even legalization, has that put the mafia cartels, if not out of business, at least pushed them to the side?
Well, when we're talking about organized crime relative to marijuana, especially when we're talking about cartels, we're generally talking about Mexican south of the border cartels who are moving product up. Some of those Mexican cartels are also emulating local homegrown cartels, or organized groups that are growing outlaw bootleg marijuana crops on public land, like in national forests. Even in places like California, that's perfectly legal to grow, there's still illegal grow operations in national forests, often run by transnational migrants on behest of some of these cartels. So it does still exist. Here in Kentucky, the criminal growing of marijuana is significantly reduced from its heyday. Back when I was writing about the Cornbread Mafia, which was active in the 80s at the beginning of the domestic cannabis war waged by the DEA, and I talk about the first time a helicopter flew a marijuana eradication mission in Kentucky. It flew it over a county called Marion County in central Kentucky. That's where Maker's Mark bourbon is made.
Oh, goodness.
And in one weekend in Marion County, the helicopter found 45 acres of outlaw marijuana. That sort of scale is just not currently being, there's not a market for that kind of outdoor outlaw marijuana. There's a huge influx, a huge growth in the gray market of places in legal states, people in legal states, moving legally grown marijuana across state lines to fill the demand in states where it's not yet legal.
That's a violation of the Cole memo, though, right?
Oh, sure. It's a violation of all kinds of memos. It's a violation of federal law.
Well, you know what? Let's take a very short break, and I do want to pick up on that and get back to our conversation, talking about several things, including the fact that last Thursday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced that the Justice Department will be reversing the Obama administration's approach to marijuana, getting, frankly, tougher on marijuana growers and dispensaries and perhaps users as well. Talking with James Higdon, who covers drug policy for Politico magazine, and also with Robert Mykos, who's a professor of law at Vanderbilt Law School. And you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation and talk with more of you. And this is an issue that's gotten a lot of play both locally and nationally. So do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow. Let me play a clip. This is a candidate Trump being interviewed by Bill O'Reilly the day after winning the New Hampshire primary on February 2016, talking about marijuana.
Medical marijuana, medical, I am in favor of it 100%. But what you're talking about, perhaps not. It's okay. Causing a lot of problems out there. And
but you know,
and
the medical marijuana thing is a ruse that I got a headache and I need, 2 pounds of marijuana.
Well, it is,
you
know. But I know people that have serious problems.
But that
and they
be taken
did
care
that.
Of.
And they really, it really does help them.
Okay.
You know, Robert, it's so interesting. Here's President Trump, a candidate, but now President Trump talking about the fact that we should have legalized marijuana. We knew how President Obama felt about it. We knew that he smoked marijuana. President Bush as well. So we've got three presidents who seem to be more willing to sort of open up the country to more legalized marijuana, and yet we have all these laws that are still on the books. What do we make of that? I'm tossing that to you. I'm just hanging that out there.
Well, I think part of it is, as James mentioned earlier, it's a dysfunctional Congress. It's hard to get Congress to do anything. And really for the last decade, especially under the Obama administration, there was no real impetus for Congress to change the laws because the Obama administration was essentially soft-pedaling them, was refusing to enforce them against people who are in compliance with state laws. So there was no real reason for Congress to get involved, especially to change the legal status of marijuana. They could always, sort of blame the executive or say the executive is handling it. So this change in policy, it may give an incentive to Congress to revisit that, especially if a crackdown follows. But I think that's the big reason. There's growing popular support for marijuana legalization. In the past, the executive was able to handle it. I don't think there's that lots of people support legalization of this drug. I don't think it's one of those burning issues for them. I think the economy is more important, immigration, things like that are more important to them. So I think Congress just hasn't had any reason to revisit it. But given the growing size of this industry, the number of people who are involved, and the fact that the executive may not play along in the future, Congress might finally have an incentive to go back and maybe change the status of marijuana and change those laws.
James, let me go to something that you wrote in Politico magazine about the American Legion, a conservative veterans organization, mm-hmm. by any measure has voted twice in favor of resolutions to expand research and safe access for all its members. And I'm trying to picture, you know, a veteran maybe in a wheelchair who's using medical marijuana getting arrested. That is just, you know, that would seem to me would be untenable.
Correct. So, and, you know, to build off what Professor Mikos was talking about, Congress has ignored this because of the Obama administration had played kind of a hands-off approach. Then there was a lot of frustration that the Obama administration didn't make a legalization effort on the way out the door. The way I read the Controlled Substances Act, mm-hmm. the president can reschedule any drug in the drug schedules. Obama could have reduced marijuana from Schedule 1, or either of his attorney generals could have. And the fact that they did not has been frustrating to a lot of people. The coalition of people who have been active in this since it's been, you know, during the Obama administration has certainly grown to include conservative organizations like the American Legion and, you know, various senior citizens groups and parents with kids with epilepsy. It's very difficult to tell these people no. So these parents with the kids with the epilepsy have been the most powerful, effective lobbyists on this mm-hmm. issue than anyone. They go into these state legislators' offices, they hold up these giant Ziploc bags of medications that they have to give their kids, and it's very difficult for that legislator to tell that parent no.
I mean, that's a powerful image. No, I'm sorry, go ahead, James.
So the coalition has certainly broadened. In the past, it's been a state-by-state issue, certainly an out-west state issue that makes eastern states easier to ignore it. The question is, has it percolated up to a national issue with a broad national coalition? Will the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, for that matter, as a party, as a platform, take a stand on this issue as it relates to, trying to unseat incumbents in Congress?
Let me get some callers in on the conversation. We've got Robert from Philadelphia. Robert, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. We have Robert. We will get Robert squared away. There he is. Go ahead, Robert. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. As an owner of real estate in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, I'm in the process of final lease negotiations with a marijuana dispensary. I own the real estate. I'm not operating the dispensary, but my concern is with the RICO Act and repossession or taking of my asset. I'd like to hear what the panel has to say about that and whether other real estate owners across the country should be concerned with that, with just being a landlord and not operating a facility. Listen to your answer online.
Robert, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Can you take that, Robert Mikos?
Sure. And the first thing I'll advise is to get a lawyer who can look into this for you. Obviously, this isn't going to be a substitute for legal advice, but there are special provisions of the Controlled Substances Act. That's the most relevant federal statute, the one that bans marijuana outright. There is a special provision that is aimed at landlords like the caller. And that provision makes it a separate crime to rent real property, like a warehouse or a storefront, to someone who is producing or distributing an illicit drug, like marijuana.
Wow.
So even if the landlord doesn't touch the plant or participate in the growing, they're still engaging in criminal activity. And they might also be swept up by broad statutes barring conspiracies, for example, or aiding and abetting these activities. So there are particular troubles for landlords who do business with this industry. In the past, in California, for example, when the Department of Justice was still interested in trying to crack down on medical marijuana, so before the Obama administration, the Department of Justice sent letters to lots of landlords who were renting property to these medical marijuana dispensaries, basically warning them that unless you terminate your lease in some period of time, the federal government might come in and initiate a criminal prosecution or asset forfeiture proceeding. So there are legal risks involved. They seemed small under the Obama administration, but they may have just grown with what happened last week.
Robert, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Kristen from Norristown has to say. And Kristen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi. I don't hear in a lot of these conversations about the children of parents who use recreational marijuana. I grew up in the 70s, and both my parents were users, and I suffered immensely from that. Just in terms of them not being mentally, emotionally available to me. I understand the reasons behind medical marijuana. I totally support that. I also understand the reasons why legalizing is important, and I certainly don't agree with anything that comes out of the Trump administration. So, but I do not hear a whole lot about the children of people who are now able to use it recreationally and, you know, the effects. My brother started using marijuana when he was 14 with my parents. They actually dealt drugs to each other, and he had a real problem.
Sure.
As did they.
Well, you know, okay. Kristen, no, I really appreciate the call. And obviously what you were dealing with were parents who were misusing this drug, if I can put it that way, kind of the way an alcoholic family would be misusing that drug. If a parent, you know, gave a 14-year-old a glass of gin or vodka, I mean, it seems to me that would be in the same line. But it's such an important question. And I wonder, and perhaps I can put that to you, Robert Mikos, whether with this growing acceptance, there are dangers, as Kristen just described.
There are certainly dangers with this drug. This is one of them. It's not a harmless drug by any measure. But the question is, how do we respond to those dangers? I think as even the caller recognized, you know, an outright prohibition, especially criminal prohibition, may not be the right approach. Instead, it might be educating parents and trying to bolster family services from the state to get involved when there's a situation like this where a parent is abusing marijuana or abusing other drugs and offering them to children. So that might be the approach. There are some legal issues that have arisen regarding custody disputes if the parents split and one parent is a marijuana user. That's where the courts have really gotten involved and maybe have a more direct access to the family situation and can say, hey, you've got to use this responsibly or else your visitation rights would be cut off, something along those lines.
Sure. Kristen, I really appreciate that phone call to Radio Times. Let me read a tweet from Jay who says, marijuana laws in the United States are often weaponized to go after certain kinds of people in certain kinds of neighborhoods. Despite recent progress, that hasn't changed. These retrograde laws remain to keep locking up black people. James Higdon, would you agree with that?
Yes.
And why is that?
Well, without question, states, especially states who haven't done any legalization efforts, I'm talking to you from Kentucky. So for Kentucky, for instance, we've given police officers the discretion to enforce laws upon who they encounter in the course of their workday. And police officers have a dangerous job, but discretion as to which laws are enforced in which communities should not be among the police officer's toolkit. It should be much clearer. In Kentucky, for instance, 24% of the narcotics arrests in the state are marijuana-related. But in Louisville, with a high concentration of black people, it's more like 35%.
Wow.
So, you know, it's very clear that communities of color are being targeted more aggressively for marijuana than your average white person.
Let me get Talib from Bear, Delaware, to weigh in on this as well, and I'll get a response from you, Robert Mikos. Talib, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. My question also relates to race. I know your guest touched on the subject of the generational gap and how that shapes the views of people in Congress and our lawmakers. I just wanted to ask your guest, you know, also about race. Does lawmakers or people in Congress also view that differently among, like, African Americans or, let's say, European Americans. I mean, yesterday or the day before, I know in Kansas, a lawmaker made a comment about how marijuana affects black people differently. So can you please comment on that for me?
Yeah, Talib, I appreciate the call. I'm going to give you a chance, Robert, to respond.
Yeah, maybe one thing I want to point out is that for all the talk about legalization, it's not guaranteed to address some of these issues about race and the law and racial disparities. One problem, as James mentioned, the police have enormous discretion in who to prosecute and stop and arrest and so on for marijuana crimes. But there are a lot of other crimes that they can go after as well. So even after you wipe this particular statute or ban from the books, doesn't mean that police are all of a sudden going to stop arresting more African Americans. The other issue that's arisen in this field is that after you replace prohibition with a system of regulation and license distribution, there are concerns that you're going to recreate those racial disparities that existed before. Because to get into this business, people need a lot of money. Oftentimes there are criminal background checks that might exclude minority owners from participating. So some states are trying to deal with that through racial preferences or other systems to try to boost minority participation. But there's a danger, even as you move away from criminalized prohibition, that those disparities aren't going to go away.
We're almost out of time here. James, how much money is being made in the legal marijuana business? Do we know?
Oh, gosh. I think it's something like $8 billion at the moment. It's difficult to track because, the Bureau of Labor Statistics certainly isn't keeping track of it. So these states are kind of having to ad hoc piece it all together themselves. But we're looking at an industry that's projected to have 200,000 jobs by 2020.
Wow. And I'm assuming for states where it's legal, that's money in the coffers.
That's a lot of tax money.
That's a lot of tax money.
In the case of Nevada, Republican Governor Brian Sandoval signed legal marijuana into law, adult use, and that was the only new money in Nevada state budget that year.
Wow. Wow. So do you, I'm asking you to look into your crystal ball there, James. I realize you're in Kentucky, but you also have been obviously following this drug policy in Washington,
sure.
D.C. Do you see this going somewhere? We talked about the dysfunction in Congress, but do you think, especially with all this public support, we're going to see some kind of change?
Well, the first thing to see will be how these budget negotiations pan out for the omnibus spending bill. The CR is due to run out January 19th. So we'll get a tea leaf very soon as to whether these protections are extended in the omnibus spending bill. And then that gives Congress just short of a year to get something done. So during 2018, of course, nothing's going to get done during the campaign cycle. It depends on, it might depend on how the 2018 congressional races turn out. One will see, but the first thing, the first data point everyone should look at is how this budget negotiation works out.
Okay, January 19th. James Higdon, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And he covers drug policy for Politico magazine. And Robert Mikos, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. He's a professor of law at Vanderbilt Law School, joining us from their studios. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri, with help today from Susan Greenbaum. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.